Welcome to the program for hour number two for Wednesday, January 5th, 2011 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. There are a lot of people who believe that innovation in government and creativity in government is an oxymoron. One person who does not believe that is Todd Park. He is the CTO at the Department of Health and Human Services, and he is my guest for hour number two of the program today. Todd, it's great to see you again.
Hello, Francis. Great to see you.
The most energetic person that I've met so far in government, I think. It was on a panel with you at AFSCIA, at a firm in D.C. back at the beginning of December. And so great to have an opportunity to get you in here so that everybody can hear what you're talking about innovation.
Great to be here.
Let's start at the beginning. You're working in the private sector in California, and what's the genesis of getting you to come to work for the federal government in the first place?
Well, I got an email from HHS asking me if I were interested in talking about the position of chief technology officer, a new job that they were creating.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very interested in actually meeting HHS and actually talking about this position. But my thought was I could actually help them find somebody who could fill this job, because I just moved to California recently. I promised my wife we'd stay there near her parents. We just had a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to try to, be a reasonably decent family guy for a while. But then I started talking with Bill Corr, the Deputy Secretary, about this new job, and just found myself getting ensorcelled and enraptured in thinking about the job. Because the way he described it was really interesting. He said, look, this is actually not the person who runs all the IT at HHS, because we've got CIOs across HHS to do that. This is actually a change agent position focused entirely on change. It's our entrepreneur in residence position.
Mm-hmm.
Because I actually asked him, why are you talking to me about it? Because I have no government experience at any level whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, exactly.
That's exactly right, yeah.
Exactly. He said, we got a lot of people that know government really well, but we want to actually cross-pollinate with their DNA, the DNA of someone who's an entrepreneur in the private sector. And the mission of the position, of this entrepreneur residence position, is to help HHS harness the power of data, technology, and innovation to help improve the health of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And I just found myself falling in love with the notion of joining the team.
Yeah.
And so I talked with my wife, and she said, well, if they're really creating a position like that, then it's your obligation to do it.
Yeah.
So we'll move back to the East Coast and actually do that tour duty so you can serve your country.
Mm-hmm. There is a convergence in the CTO and CIO job. For a long time, the CIO was thought of as the gadget person, fix my BlackBerry person. And with the sophistication of technology and the convergence of technology, those two jobs are coming closer together. So it's easy to see why that could be the perception from the outside. What other perceptions did you have about coming to work for the federal government before you actually did it?
Well, I'll tell you what. I've spent my life as a private sector entrepreneur, but the most entrepreneurial experience I've ever had is the last year and a half I've spent in government.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that's been something that my friends can't quite believe.
Yeah,
but it's been 100% true. I think the government is a phenomenal place to actually be an entrepreneur in the right situations, in the right moments.
Mm-hmm.
And I've discovered that there are an extraordinary number of incredibly talented, entrepreneurial, innovative people in the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been an enormous joy to discover.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been really at the heart of why the experience has been such an amazing one for me.
Mm-hmm. Other than the people that you work with, what are the other tools that an entrepreneur standing on the outside looking in may not be aware that the federal government has at its disposal?
Well, I think that one of the things that's really remarkable about a place like HHS is that it has such a vast panoply of assets. So just to give an example, one of the virtual startups that we've created, these ventures within HHS we've created, is the Community Health Data Initiative. And the whole idea behind the Community Health Data Initiative is to turn HHS into the NOAA of health data, NOAA, N-O-A-A, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
Mm-hmm.
NOAA, which I actually didn't know before I joined the government, supplies basically all weather data in America.
Yeah.
Then they publish that data online so that anybody, any innovator, anywhere can pick it up and turn it into the Weather Channel or weather.com or iPhone weather apps or weather research.
Mm-hmm.
They provide all this data online free of charge without intellectual property constraint. And so the idea that we had was, well, through this community health data initiative, why don't we actually do the same thing with health data?
Mm-hmm.
On smoking rates, community health statistics, statistics around drug recalls, food recalls, tons and tons and tons of different kinds of data points you could imagine. And the thing that we discovered, and that actually a lot of people at HHS had already known for a long time, is HHS has just an extraordinary array mm-hmm. of data sets
yeah.
that it's accumulated over the years, and which have been used for very specific and narrow purposes, but which could be used for so much more mm-hmm. if you put them in the hands of innovators across the country. And so we've been beginning to publish these data sets and market these data sets to the world outside government,
mm-hmm.
Nonprofits, for-profits, academia, innovators of all stripes. And they've been doing incredible things with this health data, turning it into applications and products and services that can benefit the American public
mm-hmm.
and improve health. And HHS, can do that uniquely well because it's sitting on so much data to
yeah.
begin with, just an incredible array of data
mm-hmm.
that is just an enormous asset for an entrepreneur who's seeking to liberate data
mm-hmm.
To be able to leverage
yeah.
To turn into a health data ecosystem that,
yeah.
that can improve health.
Yeah. There's a significant space between taking the data that you have and pushing it out there and just
yeah.
letting it sit there and what you're doing.
Yeah.
Talk about what fills that space.
Yes. So when we first started the Community Health Data Initiative, we thought that about 50% of the work would be publishing the data. And about 50% of the work would be marketing the data so that the innovators of the world were aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
We were very, very wrong. It turns out that about 10% of the work is publishing the data. About 90% of the work is actually marketing it
mm-hmm.
To innovators to make sure they know it's there.
Mm-hmm.
And they use it to deliver things which are wonderful for the American public.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you think about the point of the Community Health Data Initiative, the point is not just to publish data, right? The point is to actually catalyze the emergence of an ecosystem of use of that data that benefits the American public, an
mm-hmm.
ecosystem of data supply, transformation of that data into applications that are then used by consumers, patients, doctors, hospitals, employers, public health leaders, mayors, et cetera, to make better decisions, better informed decisions, and improve health.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you think of the deliverable as the ecosystem, right, then just publishing the data is just the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
One interesting experience we had early on was we did a workshop with a bunch of Silicon Valley innovators, a bunch of the best and brightest innovators in the tech world. And we showed them a bunch of data sets and said, well, if you have these data sets, what can you do with them? And they went crazy. And
mm-hmm.
they came up with all kinds of really cool things that could be done with them to help people improve health. And then we said, well, we'll actually make this data available, easy to find in one place in a week
mm-hmm.
for you then to actually turn this stuff into cool apps,
yeah.
Which they then did. But one interesting factoid about all that is a lot of that data was data that already had been in the public domain
mm-hmm.
for a very long time.
Yeah.
But it had just been impossible to find.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't in a form that developers could use easily. And the Silicon Valley folks just had no idea it existed. Right.
Yeah.
So it just kind of in a nutshell illustrates why marketing is such a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you supply the greatest data in the world, but nobody knows it's there,
right,
then you can't create an ecosystem that uses that data to deliver good.
Yeah, so, it's the old tree falls in the woods.
That's right.
Deal.
Exactly right. If you publish data, then nobody knows, and who cares?
Doesn't matter if it was published or not.
Well, that's right. That's right.
What's been the biggest challenge in that marketing process in getting people who are potential users of this data to know that it's there and know the power that's available through it?
Well, I think the whole thing is really a challenge because marketing is just really hard work.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've actually been doing is a combination of things. We've been putting together events and workshops to educate academia, educate journalists, educate inventors and developers, educate constituents from across the healthcare ecosystem,
mm-hmm.
right, about the data that we've got and how it could be used. We've been doing challenges, right, basically public competitions. Who can build the best app that using this particular data set to help kids engage in health data and improve health,
mm-hmm.
So on and so forth. But, I think there's no one particular aspect of it that's actually, I think, more challenged than other aspects of it. I think the overarching task of the marketing has just been a lot of,
a lot of shoe leather and phone calls
leather,
and emails.
A lot of phone calls, a lot of emails, a lot of talking, a lot of networking,
mm-hmm.
just a lot of, good old-fashioned hard work,
mm-hmm.
But it's paying massive dividends because as I think Bill Joy said way back in the day, no matter who you are, right, you got to recognize that most of the smart people in the world don't work for you. And the corollary to that is if you can get those smart people to care about what you care about,
mm-hmm.
right, that's an incredible engine of happy, happy, joy, joy, right?
Yeah.
And so if you look at the apps that are being built with our data right now, I mean, there's just no way HHS could possibly have built those apps by itself, right?
Mm-hmm.
But HHS can enable them by making data available and then leveraging the fact that there's all these smart people in the world that care about health to turn that data into a whole panoply of super cool applications and uses that the government never possibly could have come up with.
Mm-hmm. My show's been on the air, Todd, for about 2.5 years, and I think you, with that happy, happy, joy, joy, made the first Ren and Stimpy reference in the history of In-Depth with Francis Rose. That's very cool.
I'm delighted to have done it.
Todd Park is the Chief Technology Officer at the Department of Health and Human Services, my guest on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be back in a moment.
Flu shots and future mothers. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. It's flu season, and pregnant women are at an increased risk of becoming infected. Dr. Indu Aluwalia is an epidemiologist with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Influenza infection among pregnant women can result in severe illness and increased hospitalizations and even death.
There is no special flu vaccine for pregnant women.
There are two forms of the vaccine available to the general public, the nasal spray and the flu shot, and the flu shot is what's recommended for pregnant women.
It's recommended that women get the flu vaccine anytime during their pregnancy. Flu season normally goes from August to March. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
I'm not just some tall drink of water, you know. I mean, I wash your dishes, I do the laundry, I help put out fires. I'm always there when you need me. 24/7, at home, at work, just about anywhere. And I'm not expensive, but I have great taste. Well, I guess I am a tall drink of water, but I'm tap water, and that makes me special. For more information about what only tap water delivers, visit drinktap.org.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
Profile America, Wednesday, January 5th. When Prohibition ended in 1933, the sale of alcoholic beverages resumed in the U.S., but subject to a patchwork of differing regulations. Local options mean that some counties remain dry. A few states regulate the alcoholic content of beer sold at supermarkets and gas stations. In a few states, beer, wine, and liquor may be sold practically anywhere. And in 18 states, liquor is sold exclusively in state-run facilities. The first state-controlled liquor stores opened in Pennsylvania this week in 1934. Today in the U.S., Americans drink an average of about 1.5 gallons of distilled spirits annually. You can find these and more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for the Dorabeck Insider this afternoon. How do you share information in the age of those WikiLeaks leaks? We're going to talk to an expert who helped the State Department create the Diplopedia collaboration tool about lessons learned from WikiLeaks. And the Defense Department, they've just published their final rule on organizational conflicts of interest. What does it mean to you? We'll find out this afternoon, 3 to 7, on the Dorabeck Insider. It's right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Todd Park of the Department of Health and Human Services, my guest, and we're talking about innovation in government. We talked about your entrepreneurial experience beforehand, what you did in the private sector before you came into government. What was the hardest thing for you to adjust to as far as the structure goes, obviously in an entrepreneurial operation that you're in charge of, you're it, and you decide you're going to go this direction and you go.
Right.
That's probably not the same as what you experienced at HHS, but maybe there is an element of that given that what you're doing is a little bit of a carve out from the normal agency operation.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I mean, I think that, at a high level, you know, if you're going from an organization that you're basically leading, to an organization like HHS, you know, which is massive.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like a really massive change. And from an environment standpoint, you know, it is a very different environment. But I've actually found that my day to day, month to month, life as an entrepreneur, and kind of rhythm of life as an entrepreneur is actually very, very similar.
Mm.
'Cause what's happening at HHS is I'm not running, you know, large chunks of the operations.
Mm-hmm.
I'm basically charged with identifying key opportunities,
mm-hmm.
To help the American public, and then literally founding these virtual startups,
mm-hmm.
Recruiting teams from across HHS to then operate as, you know, super nimble virtual project teams,
mm-hmm.
within HHS to go do something really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think of each of these project teams, these virtual startups, as, you know, entrepreneurial ventures.
Mm-hmm.
And they act and talk very similar to the ventures that I was leading in the private sector.
Mm-hmm.
And they're populated with people that are phenomenal. And the reason why the ventures are becoming so successful is not because of me.
Mm-hmm.
It's because of these teams of people who are doing just extraordinary work.
Talk about the development of one of these virtual startups.
Yeah.
How do you go about identifying, as you call it, an opportunity,
yeah.
That's worthy of one of these?
Yeah. Well, in certain cases, there are priorities that have been designated by the secretary. And so that is a very straightforward exercise to say, okay, that's a key opportunity to go after.
Mm-hmm.
In other cases,
because the boss wants you to.
Yeah.
That's a good reason.
Because it's really important. Yeah, absolutely. And so that's one way. And then another way is to have something bubble up, actually, and to have a team of people bubble up with it,
mm-hmm.
From across HHS that are really interested in it and they want to band together to do something about it. And that's actually very exciting as well.
Mm-hmm.
A good example of that is we launched a virtual startup recently called Text for Health. Which is a task force that's basically charged with maxing out the ability for HHS to leverage text messaging to help improve health.
Mm-hmm.
And the way this came about is kind of an interesting story. We, with the blessing of the secretary, launched an innovation awards competition that we're now holding every 6 months across HHS called HHS Innovates.
Mm-hmm.
And the way this works is any HHS employee can nominate online a person or a team that's done something really awesome. That's actually executed an innovation that really changes how HHS does business and helps it improve delivery on its mission. So the first round that we did earlier in 2010, over 100 teams got nominated for these awards. Then we put all the teams online and have the entire workforce vote,
mm-hmm.
on which ones they think are the coolest. And so 10,000 votes were cast. We narrowed it down to 6 finalists, and the secretary then actually picked her favorite 3. One of the 3 winners, which we celebrated with, a big public ceremony, was called Text for Baby, which actually I spoke with your friend Chris Dorbeck about,
mm-hmm.
earlier. And Text for Baby is this really cool public-private venture where any mother or father actually can text baby or bebe in Espanol to 51401,
mm-hmm.
and they get automatically enrolled in a series of text messages that they get throughout the course of the pregnancy and the first year of the baby's life. That helps you understand how the best to take care of your baby.
Wow.
So it got launched in February, and well over 100,000 moms have signed up for this now. It's actually the largest free text messaging health program in the country.
Wow.
And getting a ton of traction. And it was actually put together by a group of courageous public and private sector entrepreneurs that band together and said, this is a really good idea.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things we've actually now done is said, well, that's a really incredible achievement. How can we scale that and clone that across HHS?
Mm-hmm.
So in the wake of the win of Text for Baby, of HHS Innovates, we formed this Text for Health work group and recruited a bunch of people who've been doing really cool work on text messaging and mobile health across HHS to join this team,
mm-hmm.
to figure out, well, how are we going to basically help take Text for Baby from 100,000 moms to 1 million moms by the end of 2012? And how can we clone it in areas like potentially smoking cessation,
mm-hmm.
right, or healthy kids?
Yeah.
And so there's a bunch of really exciting work happening there. But that's an example of the one that, you know, wasn't kind of a leadership designated priority, right? You know, but one where really cool stuff happened and a team bubbled up, an idea bubbled up to then form a virtual startup that's on a very tight time frame to deliver something really cool that we'll be talking about in a couple months.
And no disrespect to the ideas that come from above, but those have to be really exciting, maybe more exciting than the other kinds, because you know that you're getting them from people who are passionate about that particular issue.
Oh, it's 100% right. Yeah. You know, and you know, the people at HHS are extraordinarily passionate about what they do. I mean, you know so much about virtually every aspect of health and healthcare. And so the smartest thing the leader can do is say, look, I'm basically not here to lead. I'm here to follow. So basically find the very smartest people and most dedicated people, of which there are a ton at HHS, right? And figure out what they're working on, what they're obsessed about, what ideas they have, right? And then basically connect them with sisters and brothers across HHS they may not have known about into virtual teams focused on that particular idea. Mm-hmm. And then give them the air cover and the highway for them to go kick butt, right? And support them. And that's really... what I've been doing in my entrepreneur residence role. It's what we're doing more broadly across HHS, and it's working really well.
Your job sounds like a tremendous mix of leader and manager. And by that, I mean manager at the most hands-on level, as you talked about those connections. Let's talk about how that melds together when we come back from the break.
Fantastic.
Todd Park, the CTO at the Department of Health and Human Services, is my guest on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be right back.
NBC News Radio, I'm Ron Allen. A new day is dawning on Capitol Hill. The 112th Congress is now in session. Republicans now have a majority in the House of Representatives, with John Boehner officially nominated and voted in as the new Speaker of the House.
The Honorable John A. Boehner, a representative-elect of the state of Ohio.
And the changes just keep coming. White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs says he'll be stepping down in a few weeks after years of working with President Obama.
It's a remarkable privilege. It is, in many ways, the opportunity of a lifetime.
Gibbs will continue as a private consultant to the president. No word yet on his replacement. In other news, the California Supreme Court has ruled police do not need a search warrant to search a cell phone carried by someone under arrest. The state's deputy attorney general expects the case to go all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. I'm Ron Allen, NBC News Radio.
As a pizza delivery guy, it's my job to deliver your pizza in 30 minutes or it's free.
Turn left ahead.
If I don't, my boss isn't happy. So I rely on the right guidance to get me where I need to go.
Turn left now.
I feel the same about my taxes. TurboTax has a unique GPS feature that guides me step by step. It automatically double checks along the way, which helps me know it's done right and get my maximum refund guaranteed.
Try it online now at TurboTax.com. Choose easy. Money back guarantee details at TurboTax.com.
Good news, ladies. Ugly brown spots on your skin might feel like they're the end of the world, but they're not. You can fade those brown spots from view with Dr. Perry's Night Skin Cream. New customers can try Night Skin Free. Diminish the appearance of brown spots on your face, neck, and hands. Try Night Skin Free. Call 1-800-509-4152. Pay only shipping and handling. One per household. Call for your free Night Skin. Call 1-800-509-4152. That's 1-800-509-4152.
IT professionals and graduates from around the country have a lot to say about their experiences from the online masters in information systems from UMBC, the University of Maryland, Baltimore County.
My current title is Chief of Technology. That was one of the things that I was actually looking for, was to have chief or officer within my position title.
Apply today for our upcoming semester. For more information, call 1-800-353-UMBC or visit us online at onlinems.umbc.edu.
A persistent problem facing all government agencies today is disposal of their confidential documents or other sensitive material. The best solution is turning your confidential files into energy. That's right, energy. Get clean and go green with Energy Recovery Operations on Aberdeen Proving Ground in Edgewood, Maryland. Since 1988, Energy Recovery has destroyed all sorts of government confidential records and magnetic media while producing energy. there is complete destruction. Do the green thing. Turn your government confidential records into energy. Go to EnergyRecoveryOnline.com or call 410-679-6200. Your mission is possible. Stop identity theft. Burn your government-sensitive records. Log on to EnergyRecoveryOnline.com or call 410-679-6200. That's EnergyRecoveryOnline.com. This message will self-destruct in 3 seconds. 3, 2, 1.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife.
My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
Profile America, Wednesday, January 5th. When Prohibition ended in 1933, the sale of alcoholic beverages resumed in the U.S., but subject to a patchwork of differing regulations. Local options mean that some counties remain dry. A few states regulate the alcoholic content of beer sold at supermarkets and gas stations. In a few states, beer, wine, and liquor may be sold practically anywhere. And in 18 states, liquor is sold exclusively in state-run facilities. The first state-controlled liquor stores opened in Pennsylvania this week in 1934. Today in the U.S., Americans drink an average of about 1.5 gallons of distilled spirits annually. You can find these and more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
Plan now to attend a firm's January 20th luncheon to discuss how government is going green. Learn how to comply with administration requirements that 95% of government's electronic products be energy efficient, and hear from the White House and other policy officials how sustainability will impact all future acquisitions. Join a firm on Thursday, January 20th at 11:30 a.m. in the G.W. Marvin Center in Washington, D.C. Register today at www.affirm.org. We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Todd Park is the Chief Technology Officer at the Department of Health and Human Services and my guest for the hour. And we were talking before the break, Todd, about the difference and the elements of your job, the leadership elements and the managerial elements. And you were talking specifically about the managerial elements when it comes to connecting people who have ideas for meeting the mission of the agency and doing it under the entrepreneurial concepts that you're laying in there. Okay. How much of your job is that managerial element of connecting people and getting these things, sparking these projects? And how much of it is more of a leadership role, which I see as the long view, 30,000 foot level of developing where your operation's going to go?
Yeah. It's interesting because if I were to break down the job, I would say that about, first of all, about 80% of it is focused on creating and leading these virtual startups.
Mm-hmm.
About 20% is just functioning as an advisor mm-hmm. on key issues. And if you were to take that 80% that's spent on the virtual startups, I would say it's probably a pretty even split.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So pretty even split between the leadership aspects and the managerial aspects. On the leadership side, you know, I mean, basically leading the creation of a vision, articulating that vision, mm-hmm. iterating that vision, finding the right people, and getting them fired up, right, about making the vision a reality.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of time,
mm-hmm.
And something that I just have an enormous amount of respect for him from a process standpoint. Mm-hmm. And so I really try to spend a lot of time on that.
Mm-hmm.
But the managerial part is also incredibly important, right? I mean, then wiring the right people together, making sure there's the right process and the right highway and the right air cover for them to do their thing.
Yeah.
That's incredibly important to do as well,
mm-hmm.
Particularly in a large and complex organization like HHS.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things I'll actually stress about that is that there's a lot of cross-pollination between those two halves, the leadership half and the management half.
Mm-hmm.
I think a key part of the managerial process that you want to set up is to continually refresh your vision, right? And I'm a very strong believer in the fact that vision isn't sort of like me going sitting on top of a mountain and thinking really hard, right? But you know, co-creating a vision with the whole team, right? Where everyone owns it
mm-hmm.
and everyone contributes to iterating it.
Uh-huh.
Right? And that's what we've done in each of these virtual startups.
Yeah.
You know, everyone feels like they're part of the vision team.
Mm-hmm.
and you get a better vision and you get better execution of the vision because everyone understands it
uh-huh.
right? and it was a part of putting it together. So
is the evolution of that vision a defined process, or is it just organic and it just kind of happens and you realize as some event happens or some person says something, hey, wait a minute, maybe it's time to shift in a different direction? I mean, are there vision meetings or things like that, or do they work themselves out in different ways?
I think it's a mix of both. And I'll have sort of two examples. So for the Community Health Data Initiative, that's been more organic, mm-hmm. I would say. Our initial idea when we first started the initiative was to say, okay, well, you know, we've got all this really powerful data. Why don't we publish a map of the data, right? You know, that allows people to actually look at health performance, you know, or a variety of different health statistics easily, right? And then we actually had this eureka moment where we said we should take a play from the NOAA playbook and actually just publish the underlying data
mm-hmm.
and publish all kinds of underlying data that enable people to then turn that data into really cool applications to help people.
Mm-hmm.
And so that whole process of iterating that vision from the government builds an app to actually liberate the data and have everyone build apps,
mm-hmm.
right? That didn't happen through any kind of prescribed McKinsey-esque process, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was just an organic flow that of thinking that happened. On the other hand, actually, another one of these virtual startups, healthcare.gov, has had a more structured visioning process. So we've actually been convening events that we call Lollapaloozas. Where we actually bring the entire team into a kind of very small room with whiteboards and a bunch of Diet Coke, you know,
uh-huh.
And say, okay, what do we want to do next, right? You know, and so, you know, we created in the first Lollapalooza vision for healthcare.gov as a consumer service, right, as a website where anyone could go to get help finding the right insurance coverage, finding the best quality provider, and getting tips for how to stay healthy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we've held subsequent Lollapaloozas that essentially – define the next sort of 18 miles of highway that we want to actually lay down and promulgate in terms of the development of the website.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's actually been very, very structured. And I think both work. And actually a mix of the two actually works really well. Just, you know, different strokes for different ventures,
mm-hmm.
As it were.
I think it's really cool that healthcare.gov was developed on maximum caffeine power. I think just
pizza and Mountain Dew and Diet Coke. Absolutely, baby. Yeah.
It's amazing for innovation, isn't it? Todd Park, the Chief Technology Officer of the Department of Health and Human Services, my guest on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll be right back.
Don't miss the event of the season. Tickets for the Caps Care Casino Night and Auction are on sale now at WashingtonCaps.com. Enjoy an evening of gaming and mingling with Caps players and coaches, all in the name of charity. The second annual Caps Care Casino Night and Auction, Sunday, January 9th, 2011, at the Hilton Alexandria Mark Center. All proceeds benefit Washington Capitals Charities. Get your tickets now at WashingtonCaps.com.
What's next for cell phones? Fancy editing of high-quality video? Data mining? Not yet, unless you want to carry around very bulky equipment. Your cell phone may do a lot of cool stuff, but its batteries, processor, and memory can't compete with your desktop computer.
The more complex you get with your expectations, the more requirements your applications have on the phone's resources.
Petros Maniatis, an Intel researcher, points to security as an example. He says a virus scan performed within your smartphone would take way too long and gulp power. The solution may lie in so-called cloud computing, where data is beamed
off to a cloud somewhere, to a server machine sitting somewhere far away, and you do the scanning there. So it takes energy, but it doesn't take the energy from your battery.
There are still engineering challenges to syncing cloud with phone, but you may one day carry the power of thousands of desktops in your pocket. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Newsmakers on the Dorabeck Insider.
Manish Chopra is the Obama administration's chief technology officer.
The ecosystem that's been born out of the open health data movement, I believe, is one of the shining lights.
Of course, it's great having somebody like Todd Park over there.
We've got chief technologies officers at the VA under Peter Levin and Jim Shelton, who runs innovation over at the Department of Education. All have demonstrated results in fostering these ecosystems to not only publish the data, but to do something meaningful with it.
Hear the entire interview online. FederalNewsRadio.com/Dorabeck Insider.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Todd Park. He is the Chief Technology Officer at the Department of Health and Human Services. And the idea of entrepreneurialism and innovation in government, as I mentioned at the top of the show, is one that a lot of people don't expect to find. And in fact, I imagine there are some folks within government who don't expect to find it. Talk about what level of resistance you met to some of the ideas that you have that really are 180 degrees opposite of how an agency like HHS probably usually works.
Actually, I've encountered surprisingly little resistance, and I don't think that that's because of my position, you know, because in my experience, basically, your position ultimately in an org chart doesn't mean all that much from the standpoint of, you know, people's willingness to embrace what you're talking about and make it a reality. So I think it's more to do with the fact that, you know, what we're actually trying to do is a set of things that people think make a lot of sense. And they're amalgamations of a lot of thinking and ideas that people already had for a very long time, but were never priorities, right? Were never actually things that HHS mobilized to do. Now there have been people who have really needed to process some of those ideas and actually think them through and their implications and how enthusiastic to dive into them, right? You know, but the way to actually have those folks plug in isn't to kind of browbeat them or say, look, this is something that the leadership wants to do, but make them part of the visioning process, make them part of the whole entrepreneurial process, the whole learning process, you know? As they've learned and as we've all learned together, you know, I think that, that learning process, which is really at the heart of entrepreneurship, is rapid learning and iteration, has really both enriched these projects and made them that much more potent, generators of good, but also really created the kind of broad buy-in that they need to become self-sustaining.
I imagine if someone sees that you're serious about taking action on ideas that aren't necessarily thought of in the C-suite, that probably goes a long way to making people feel like this isn't going to be the same old operation.
Big time, big time. I mean, the whole HHS Innovates program, for example, you know, has been a really important cultural signal, right? The whole idea that we're looking to identify really cool things people have done that not everyone may know about, including the C-suite, and elevate that. And not just elevate those innovations via awards, but then taking them and saying, okay, how can we really turbocharge this? A la, you know, taking text for baby and turning it into text for health.
Right.
That just sends a really important message about the value of innovation from the bottom up, right? And how people in the C-suite really ultimately see themselves as followers of the really cool people who are doing amazing things, you know, on the front lines.
What processes or procedures or theories or other tools that you had in your toolbox as an entrepreneur have you wanted to implement at HHS and either not gotten to yet or not been able to or whatever?
Yeah, that's such a great question. Actually, let me think about it for 2 seconds. Every single muscle, reflex, instinct, lesson learned that I was utilizing in the private sector, I've used in the public sector and been developing more muscles. you know, because it's a learning experience, right? You know, entrepreneurship is a continual learning experience at its best. And so, I mean, and I haven't found there to be a single tool in my toolkit that I haven't used.
That's interesting because there's, of course, you're aware of this dialogue that's been going on longer than either one of us have been alive about government. Some people think you should run government like a business. Some people say you can't do it. And I think people are starting to come around to the amalgamation that it sounds like you're talking about, of you take business concepts and apply them to the public sector, and you can take some concepts that work in the public sector and apply them to private business, and I'm sure
absolutely
that you'll have that benefit when you leave your service at HHS.
Well, I think that you know, entrepreneurship is a mode of operation that transcends sector.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that you can find brilliant entrepreneurs in the private sector, in the public sector, in the not-profit sector. If you define an entrepreneur as someone who creates something from nothing or very little, who actually innovates, right, and doesn't just innovate at the idea level, but drives that idea to concrete reality in a very rapid and rapidly iterating fashion, right? You know, then you know, that definition of entrepreneur as innovator, right, who takes with very little resources a great idea and turns it into reality.
Mm-hmm.
You can find, I think, a great array of those people across the sectors.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think of entrepreneurship less as a business concept that's been applied to government and more as a general mode of attack, a general mode of actually solving problems and realizing opportunities that's applicable really to any sector.
Mm-hmm. We've got to do one more break before we wrap up, but I want to do a little role-playing when we come back. And
sure.
This will be easy for you because you'll be you.
Okay.
And it's me that's got to be somebody else. We'll do that when we come back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's In Depth with Francis Rose.
How's your search going?
The job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview, and I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know? The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C. Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my mom.
I'd probably talk about girls.
We'd probably talk about girls.
Anything, boys, school, clothes.
You'd be amazed at what they'll talk about if you give them the chance.
If I had a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If it were a real heart-to-heart, I'd tell my parents what I'm going through.
I'd probably talk to them about growing up.
I'd probably tell my dad that I wish we'd do more stuff together.
I don't think it has to be a heart-to-heart. I just want to talk.
Give your family everything. Give them your time. From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
I'm Police Officer Sergeant Goodwin. I've been looking into a report of thieves operating in this area. We have now located their hideout, and it's at your local bank. The banks are robbing you blind.
Hi, I'm John Commuta, creator of the Transforming Debt into Wealth system. He's right. If you've got a mortgage, your bank is stealing from you because a typical monthly mortgage payment is 90% or more interest. And over the life of a 30-year mortgage, that can cost you a fortune. It should be illegal. But there's a proven way to eliminate your mortgage and all your other debts using just the money you already make. No credit card debt, no car payment, no mortgage. To prove it, let me send you a copy of my powerful Live Debt-Free CD. Call 1-800-600-1195. Stop getting robbed of your money and future. Get my powerful Live Debt-Free CD. Call 1-800-600-1195. For your free copy of my Live Debt-Free CD, call 1-800-600-1195.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And as promised, some role-playing with Chief Technology Officer at the Department of Health and Human Services, Todd Park. This is an easy gig for you because you just have to be you and think the way that you think and have the experiences that you've had in your life. I have been chosen to be a CTO with a similar portfolio to you at the Department of Fill in the Blank. And you and I are going to sit down and have a cup of coffee, or maybe in your case, a 2-liter bottle of Mountain Dew and a pizza, and talk about what I can expect as I go in to do what it is that you're doing. What did you do at the beginning that proved to be beneficial to you where you are today, a year and a half later? And what did you do that maybe could have been a lower priority early on in when you got to HHS?
It's such a fantastic set of questions. So I would say the first thing that the first two things I think that are really important to do are, one, to sit down and talk with the secretary and deputy secretary in depth, right, and say from their vantage point, you know, what's their gut instinct about what they're really excited about in terms of opportunities to leverage data and technology innovation to improve health, to accomplish the mission of your department.
Yeah.
And to actually have those opportunities then be a starting point, a straw case, that you can then flesh out and test and expand. The other key step is to basically meet as many innovative and smart people across the department as possible. And there are a ton of them. But there's no directory of the really awesome innovators that are published, you know what I'm speaking. So it's a lot of work to do that. But I found that to be incredibly valuable. You know, with these straw case hypotheses that we brainstormed with the secretary and deputy secretary, right, and then actually asked, you know, who are the really cool innovators I should meet? And I had an initial list that I was given. And I then actually went to each of those people and asked them to give me a couple people that they knew who were just kick butt innovators. And then talked with them and then essentially asked them to give me two and so on and so forth, right?
Yeah.
And so pretty quickly, across some HHS, you know, which is vast, right? You know, I was able to talk with a bunch of really amazing people and able to flesh out and iterate, the set of, hypotheses in terms of what opportunities to go after, that, seemed really, really compelling. Also along the way, I actually, you know, by definition happened to meet the people who were really passionate about those ideas, who then became the core of the virtual startups that then went to execute them. And so, and that's really the third thing I would say that's really critical to do beyond those first two steps is to get to a point, methodically, but quickly, right, where you actually do start these virtual startups, right, where you do, recruit these teams, with the blessing of the secretary and deputy secretary that go after these big opportunities, that, you know, you and the innovators have collectively identified, because it's those virtual startups, these really focused, incredibly passionate teams that are the real engine of progress.
All right. Continuing in our role playing, I'm an entrepreneur just like you are. So I know, as you know, that at some point in time, something that I'm doing is going to blow up, and it's going to blow up maybe really badly, maybe, maybe a little more expensively than we would like. Talk about dealing with failure and how to know when is the time to cut something off at the knees and move on.
Yeah. So, it's really, really, really important as an entrepreneur in any sector, to fail, actually. And by fail, I mean to test things, and to learn from them. And if everything you do, turns out to be successful, then almost by definition, right, you haven't really been exploring as vigorously as you should.
Right.
You may have missed the biggest possible value you could add because you just didn't go there.
You didn't take any risk.
Right.
Yeah.
So the key to actually failing well, if I can call it that, is to do rapid iteration, right? And so what you don't want to do, right, is move in glacial time, right, where each deliverable happens every 18 months, right? And you've got so much invested, right, and you're so kind of single-threaded, in your attack pattern that, you know, I mean, you try something really huge and you spend an enormous amount of time and money doing it and blah, boom.
Yep.
And it turns out to not work. And then you're kind of up the creek, right?
Right.
What you instead want to do is actually think of your deliverables as happening on a weekly basis with major deliverables happening no more than 90 days out, right? Where you're rapidly iterating. You're trying a lot of things, right? In a very kind of directed way, but in a relatively broad sweep against a particular direction so that you're really exploring and interrogating the landscape saying, ah, okay, there's the place where I should go, right? So these six things didn't pan out, but these two things actually did. So I'm going to go there, right? If you can learn that, in 2 weeks as opposed to 18 months.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
That's the way to go. Mm-hmm. And so you want to build that kind of rapid learning process, rapid iteration process with very, very short cycle times mm-hmm. between deliverables into how you execute mm-hmm. In order to make sure that you're really learning at the rate that you need to and that you are course correcting, right, on a second-to-second basis as opposed to on a every 18-month basis,
yeah.
right? Because that's really, really hard to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You really want to course correct when you actually have to move 3 microns to the left as
yeah.
opposed to
three miles to the left. Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
We just have a minute or two left, and there's so much more that I'd like to cover with you. I'd love to get you to come back at some
That'd
point.
That'd be great. Would love to.
And talk about this stuff some more. Talk real briefly, unfortunately, about measuring and knowing when you're 3 microns off and how you need to get yourself back on track.
Yeah. I mean, it involves a set of very pragmatic judgments. I mean, you're not going to do a randomly designated controlled trial, right? You know, in a 2 week cycle time, right? But it's a set of different data points, qualitative and quantitative, that you can actually gather to make an educated judgment about whether something is the right way to go or not. And there, I think it's very important to rely not just on your individual gut, but the collective networked gut of your team.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you have imperfect data, then the thing you really need to do is actually just bring a much better gut to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we found is that at critical points in each of these ventures, it's been important to actually network the gut of the team and say, okay, well, based on this mix of qualitative and quantitative data points that we see, you know, what's the right way to roll? Right. And the team, as a team, generally speaking, tends to make much better judgments than any one of us would have. So it just goes back to the fact that, you know, entrepreneurship is all about team. It's not about the lone entrepreneur railing mm-hmm. against the dying of the light.
Yeah.
It's actually about the team working together, collaboratively, to do something that no individual one of us could possibly have done by ourselves.
Mm-hmm. And I think we've managed to take an hour to work ourselves all the way around to the core misconception about entrepreneurialism, which is that it's that lone wolf
yeah.
doing everything,
yeah.
when in fact it's the wisdom of the team that drives a successful entrepreneur.
Absolutely right. That's what I found in both the public and private sectors. That's all about the team.
Mm-hmm.
Entrepreneurship is a team sport.
It's really been great to have you in the studio with me, Todd. I really appreciate you taking the time to come here. I know you're up to your ears in everything at HHS, and it's great to have you with me today.
So great to be here. Thanks so much.
Todd Park is the Chief Technology Officer at the Department of Health and Human Services, my guest on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Later this afternoon, you can hear this entire conversation anytime you want, archived at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The Dora Beck Insider is up next tomorrow on In Depth. It's industry chat. At 1 o'clock, and the brand new Comptroller General of the United States, Gene Dodaro, my guest tomorrow at 2 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thanks for listening.